Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And from Antioch University, New England, helping students change the world with graduate degrees in environmental studies, psychology, education, and management. antioch.edu/new-england.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire has long been known as a snowmobile mecca, but in more recent years, the state's made a concerted effort to attract another type of motorized sport, all-terrain vehicles, or ATVs. And that work is now paying off, especially in Coos County, with its 1,000 miles of ATV trails and town rules that allow these off-road vehicles to be driven on certain roads. But growth and change in any recreation sector will have consequences, some good, some bad, and some a matter of opinion, and that's definitely been the case with ATVs. NHPR's news team examined this recently in a series called Off-Road, looking at the community impacts of this expansion. And today in The Exchange, we pick up on that coverage. Let's hear from you, too. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. With me in studio, Casey McDermott, reporter for NHPR. She covered the culture clash and safety issues around ATVs. And Casey, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Also with us, Todd Bookman, another reporter for us here at NHPR. He worked on the series as well, writing about the economic impacts of off-highway recreational vehicles. And Todd, thank you very much.
Hi, Laura.
And we'll bring some other voices into our conversation throughout the hour. Again, you can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Todd, just describe this push to expand ATV use in New Hampshire, especially in the North Country. What was behind it, and what does it look like now?
So it really seems like it was a concerted effort by lots of parties, and I think it always was meant to be a long-term initiative. This involved officials in Berlin and Gorham and surrounding towns, state economic development officials, trails, fish and game, and we should also say residents and ATV clubs. Maybe I'll also throw in not every resident, but lots of residents. And there were really two major initiatives at the heart of this economic push. The first was the creation of Jericho Mountain State Park. So this was turning a very small, I believe it was a city-owned park, into this 7,500-acre playground for ATVs. It's at the centerpiece of this 1,000-mile network of trails that extend far to the north and to the west. And then the second major initiative were these local ordinances that you mentioned that allowed ATVs to be driven on most city streets. And so, in effect, that allows you to, you know, park your trailer at your hotel or your Airbnb. You can unload your vehicle and then drive back and forth to the parks. And it really seems like those two policies helped kickstart the ATV economy.
And following up on your series, some people wrote in that they loved that aspect of it, that people didn't have to get off their ATVs and, you know, somehow transport them to another part of the trail. They thought that that was a big, big selling point. Some people said, I'm so jealous, we can't do this in our state.
It was interesting. I chatted with one of the hotel managers in Gorham who described sort of like a Woodstock kind of scene in his parking lot every summer weekend where folks from out of state would come, they would drop off their trailers, they would ride to the trails during the day, and then in the evening they would ATV back to the parking lot and, you know, set up pop-up tents and sort of enjoy the you know, an afternoon in the parking lot. It seems to be something that ATV enthusiasts really appreciate, this ability to not have to trailer your ATV, you know, every time you want to go for a ride.
Well, Ray Bergeron, who runs White Mountain ATV Rental, he leads a local club in Gorham. He says allowing ATVs on some local roads is a huge selling point. Let's hear.
It's a good thing. It's a nice thrill to be able, like I said, go to the drive-up, get your coffee, get your Big Mac. And it's a convenience.
Again, that's Ray Bergeron. He runs White Mountain ATV Rental. We're going to bring another voice into our conversation. With us now in studio, David Walsh, captain for New Hampshire Fish and Game's Law Enforcement Division, where he's in charge of OHRV enforcement and safety education. And Captain Walsh, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Todd described the huge expansion of ATV use across New Hampshire, but especially in the North Country. Your thoughts there, too, on the changes that you've seen, the expansion that you've seen over the years.
Yes, it's expanded greatly, and it's very well received in the OHRV community. We've seen registrations in New Hampshire at an all-time high for the last 3 years. They keep growing and growing. So certainly the need was there for more riding opportunities, and obviously it brings other issues. But the need was definitely there, and it has been well received.
A lot of the attention has been focused on the North Country because they have this Ride the Wilds, you know, huge network of trails and the special rules that Todd mentioned that allow ATVs to go on certain roads. Where else in New Hampshire, Captain Walsh, have ATV use been expanding?
We've actually seen it in many communities all the way down through the southwestern part of the state, Grafton County, Cheshire County, Sullivan County. A lot of towns are now getting pressure from local clubs or residents to open up roads, whether it be just to UTVs that have, directionals and brake lights and things like that, or to all OHRVs.
What's a UTV?
A UTV is a utility terrain vehicle, so it's the one that you sit in. It's often referred to as side-by-sides.
So it's like you're going to have to describe that a little bit more for me. I've ridden on an ATV once, but I think it was very traditional. It was,
ATV,
a big motorbike, basically.
Right, yeah. So you kind of climb on it and get on it, where UTV, you get into it. Usually has a roll cage. It's a little wider. It's heavier.
Almost like a Jeep, then.
Yes, like on a smaller version, smaller scale, sure.
Well, and you mentioned some of the other issues that have come up with this big expansion of ATVs, and we'll cover that this hour. And Casey, so I'm going to turn to you. What stories did you and Todd hope to tell in this series?
Sure. So I think the impetus was kind of a few different directions, one of which was just noticing that, you know, this is a really, as Todd alluded to, there's been a big push to expand this this recreational offering, particularly in the North Country, but in other parts of the state as well, as Captain Walsh mentioned. And we wanted to look at what that has done to that region. And we also were noticing that, you know, I would say probably every weekend, every other weekend, we get a number of press releases from New Hampshire Fish and Game about ATV accidents. So I cover health and was interested in, okay, what are the safety rules around these? What are, you know, what should people be considering when they get on them? You know, is there anything to look into with regard to kind of the health and safety aspect of these machines? And then finally, we had also been hearing from some residents who had concerns about what the growth in ATV use were doing to their communities, how it was changing them. And so that led me to go, and I went to the Camp Razor Festival just for one weekend. That was in September, and there were tens of thousands of people who poured into the Berlin-Gorham area. I mean, it's really something if you've never been up there for it. It's, you know, you can certainly see why communities would view it as an economic boom because of the numbers of ATVs and tourists that pour into the area. I talked to people there for example, a deli owner who said that he opened a deli about a mile from the ATV park simply because he wanted to cater to the ATV traffic. So it very clearly is having, a tangible kind of economic impact on the community. At the same time, what I think we were looking to add to the discussion is, you know, what are some of the other considerations that towns and residents, need to take into account as they look at whether to expand this in their own communities? So, for example, I set one of the stories that we ended up reporting on in Gorham, because that seemed to be a community where there was a lot of kind of internal debate over the benefits and drawbacks of really pushing to expand ATV use on public roads, how that's changing people even beyond those who are intimately involved in the ATV community, what that means for people who are just, you know, longtime residents of the area, longtime tourists of the area. So, we hoped to kind of shed a light on some of the discussions that have been taking place there, as we kind of look toward the future at other communities also expanding that in their own neck of the woods.
So we'll definitely look at those aspects this hour. The safety concerns we'll talk about in a few minutes. We've got a doctor from Dartmouth-Hitchcock who treats a lot of pediatric injuries. And we'll talk about some of those culture clash issues that you raise, Casey. But another question for you, Todd, please, on the economics. So what numbers did you find? How big has the economic impact been of these AT efforts to expand?
Well, there hasn't been a specific study looking at the impact of ATV tourism in COAS or any other region in the state that we were able to find. But you can pull out one telling metric. So this is the meals and rooms tax. So think of this as like all the receipts from hotels and restaurants in the region. And since 2010 in COAS, that's up 20%. That's a sizable jump. It's by no means the largest by county in the state. But, you know, it's tangible proof. People will say that this is having an impact. You know, the hotels that are in Gorham, you know, they are all full on big ATV weekends, the restaurants, the convenience stores. And a lot of businesses say that there is also a trickle-down effect. I stopped into this printing and graphics shop, something that you would on paper say has nothing to do with the ATV economy, but they're getting the jobs to do all the banners and the signs during the ATV festivals. So for those folks, you know, they're in this region that hasn't seen a lot of good economic news for the past few decades. These were paper mill towns, Berlin and Gorham, and when the paper mills shuttered, it created this huge vacuum, and it has been there for decades. And you know, backers say that we've got to fill in that vacuum with something. And the ATV economy is a smart way, they argue, to try to improve the economic climate.
Well, again, one of the people you talked to, Todd, was Ray Bergeron, who we heard from a moment ago, again, who runs White Mountain ATV Rental. And he echoes what you said, Todd, you know, that ATVs have been an amazing economic boost.
We are a defunct paper mill town, and we have reinvented ourselves to unbelievable measures, which is it's so great to see stores pop back up. You know, you look in Berlin. Berlin's got new roads coming into place. The restaurants, with a bunch of new businesses that have arisen through the OHRV market. You know, there's we're two rental companies in town. There's another snowmobile shop in Berlin that came into place. It's amazing the growth that we've been seeing.
Again, that's Ray Bergeron, who runs White Mountain ATV Rental and leads a local club in Gorham. Today in The Exchange, we are following up on the work of NHPR's Newsroom, a series called Off Road in New Hampshire. As the state transitions from ATV season to snowmobile season, we're looking at the huge popularity of off-highway recreational vehicles and some of the issues that come up: economic benefits, safety concerns, other community impacts of this expansion. Of course, we'd love to hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. Brian on Facebook echoes what we heard from Ray Bergeron. He says, think about the amount of money that comes into our state from snowmobiling. The vast majority of the people that are maintaining the network of our trail system are all volunteers. It's quite a benefit to our state. I think it's working quite well, and it's improving every season. I'd love to ask you a little bit about snowmobiles, Captain Walsh. Do some of the same issues that you deal with concerning expansion of trails, the desire for more trails, safety concerns, are the stories of snowmobiles and ATVs the same, or are they different?
They're different now. Historically, they may have been the same, but we have a network of almost 7,000 miles of snowmobile trails that has been in place in the state for some time, where we have not had that for the wheel vehicles. So that is growing. It's involving roads. So now the new problems come up with whether it be landowner complaints or traffic issues, that type of thing. Well, we don't have that with the snowmobiles. Also,
because snowmobiles aren't going to go on the roads no matter what.
No, there's some limited areas where they'll cross roads, but for the most part, all those trails are in the woods, and we don't really get at nearly as many landowner complaints because when the snow goes, all evidence of those machines go. In the wintertime, everybody has their windows closed. We don't have the noise complaints typically that we do with the wheel vehicle. So it's a different level.
Do ATVs use snowmobile trails in the off-season?
In some areas, they do. In some areas, they're allowed in the off-season. Some, they're not.
All right. Well, maybe a little bit later we'll talk about rules and regs, because I know that that's an issue, and I know, Casey, you looked at that. Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Let's go to Chris in Nashua. Hi, Chris. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. Thanks. I am the head of a condominium association in the very southwest corner of Nashua. We have on our grounds a significant portion of swampland and woodlands and a rail trail. And, you know, even though it's posted no ATVs, we have ATVs everywhere. It seems like there's swarm like bees. And they have significantly degraded trails. They have cut new trails. They've committed vandalism. And, you know, one time, for example, I went back there and I found an ATVer who had rolled his ATV on his leg, called the ambulance and the police, and for this I was rewarded with the threat of a lawsuit. So,
Threat of a lawsuit? How come?
Oh, somehow it was my fault.
Because it had happened on your land, Chris?
Exactly. So, you know, and of course, then I found out that it's essentially impossible to keep these people out and that there's some, you know, expectation that people should be able to wander wherever they want in this glorious state. And so, you know, it's been just a real bad taste down here. And, you know, of course, I'm really happy for the North Country, but there is this kind of knock-on effect, you know, in this part of the woods.
All right. Well, Chris, thank you very much for calling in. And Captain Walsh, to you first. Do those complaints sound familiar?
Yes, very familiar, especially this gentleman said he was in Nashua in the southeast or in the southern part of New Hampshire where it's much more congested. We have a lot of those issues. There's no riding opportunities, and people have the machines on the occasion where they don't want to travel up north to ride. They, you know, on occasion, we'll have these people go out and ride wherever they want. And unlike hunting in New Hampshire, riding a wheel vehicle or snowmobile, you need landowner permission wherever you go. The land does not have to be posted against it. They need landowner permission. So obviously what he's describing would be against the law.
So they need landowner permission. So if I want to ride my ATV on somebody's land in Nashua or wherever, I have to check with that person first?
Yes, you need landowner permission, or if a club has already gotten you permission, which is what a lot of the trails that already exist are, then it covers you.
Sure, because for an individual to go to every single landowner in an area would be a pretty onerous task. So the clubs usually take care of that. How have they addressed that, Todd, in the North Country, this idea of who can go where?
Well, there's an extensive network of trails, the Ride the Wilds. There's a very concerted sort of branding effort that's been undertaken with a lot of very active clubs up there. And so I think I don't know if those same issues take place in COAS the way they may be happening in the southern tier of the state. I think, you know, you've got Jericho Mountain, you've got 7,500 acres right there. And, you know, that's really the crown jewel of the ATV economy when you talk to folks up there. So I'm not sure those same issues are coming up in the North Country.
Right, because that's specially set up. Go ahead, Casey.
I think, maybe a variation on the kind of the issue of who can ride where comes up whenever it comes to road access. So, for example, in Gorham, that's one of many communities in the North Country in particular that has opened up portions of its public roads to ATV use. And there's a cohort of residents up there who are, say, you know, look, this is really loud. This is really dusty. This is particularly on festival weekends. I talked to a woman who said that she, you know, can barely hear anything whenever she's outside just trying to kind of do lawn work because it's, you know, several yards from her house. Dozens and dozens of ATVs will be zooming up and down the road during the weekend. So I think in terms of kind of the tension over where they can ride, even though it's permitted in certain parts of, you know, certain communities, there still is some underlying debate about what impact that has on the rest of the people living in that community.
So they feel like, Casey, some people feel like the trails are one thing.
Mm-hmm. Once you get into residential neighborhoods, that's another.
On the roads is another. But that is permitted.
It is.
The towns have specifically said, as part of our ATV expansion, you can ride on these specific roads.
Right.
All right, we'll talk a lot more after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. We'll be right back.
to know why it is that people suggest telling your congressional representatives how you feel about the issues. Does it make a difference?
Who can answer the burning questions about government operations?
How does the Electoral College work? Is the system outdated in our current democracy system?
What is a filibuster, and what purpose does it serve in the government?
Who can help us cleave these Gordian knots?
Civics 101.
Subscribe now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, off-road, the growing ATV culture in New Hampshire, as explored by a recent NHPR series called Off-Road. We're exploring some of the issues that have come up as New Hampshire has greatly expanded the access to ATV trails on back in the woods and sometimes on the roads as well. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We'd welcome your questions, comments, thoughts, personal experiences. 1-800-892-6477. Two NHPR reporters who worked on the series are with us, Todd Bookman and Casey McDermott, along with David Walsh, captain for New Hampshire Fish and Game's Law Enforcement Division, where he's in charge of OHRV enforcement and safety education. And all of you, I want to bring another voice into our conversation. Harry is with us from Stewartstown. And Harry, welcome. From what I understand, you are president of Ride the Wilds. Is that correct?
Incorrect. I am a past president of Ride the Wilds and past president of the New Hampshire Off-Highway Vehicle Association. And I just want to bring a different little perspective and give a little bit of history of how the whole thing got put together, just to bring a little more clarity maybe to the whole issue. In the early 2000s, Senator Gallas put together a bill to allow the purchase of, from Berlin he was, North Country, to put together the Jericho Park as an economic initiative for Berlin. Prior to that, there were riding areas in the North Country for OHRVs that had been going on for a significant period of time. One in Stratford, and another in the Millsfield area, and then in the Pittsburgh area. And what happened in the early 2012-13 era, the clubs all got together in the North Country that existed, and there were approximately six of them at that point, and said, gee, wouldn't it be a great thing for the economy, for economic benefit, to be able to interconnect all these areas with Jericho, with Pittsburgh, with Stratford, Lancaster, all those areas. And as a result of that, those clubs got together and formed a 501c3 called Ride the Wilds. It's really the North Country OHRV Coalition, and the brand is Ride the Wilds. The state was involved in the process and was helpful, but really the volunteers was a grassroots effort to put together Ride the Wilds. And through federal help, Senator Sheehan's office was extremely helpful. There had to be land swaps between federal agencies and state agencies. There had to be law changes at the state level to allow for the interconnecting and for the use of state highways to interconnect trails using highways. And so forth and so on, down through the county level, who has participated greatly, has enforcement at the county level now, down through the local level, where local police departments, et cetera. So I just think that's really, really important.
Sure.
Done through several nonprofit grants, et cetera.
So well, and our commenter, Brian, on Facebook mentioned huge volunteer efforts, and you're right, you know, all sorts of people at all sorts of levels came together to make this happen. I would love to ask you, Harry, since you called in, and I'm glad you did, about the on-road use of these off-road vehicles. That does seem to be a source of some concern and some conflict. I just wonder what you think.
Well, first off, an OHRV to be on-road is an unusual occurrence because they really are an off-road vehicle. And the intent on Ride the Wilds is that the only on-road use would be to interconnect the trail. In other words, there's no way to get from point A to point B except to go a half mile down this state highway or town highway.
Yeah.
And that was the intent. It was not the intent ever to have it so everybody everywhere would have access to trails from their house, et cetera. The second thing was to be able to have access to all the communities. And all the communities in Coos County that have OHRV riding welcome the OHRVs on their either state highways through a process, and it's a process to be able to use a state highway, and for the clubs. As far as off-highway or on-highway use in the rest of the state, that really is not a fish and game responsibility, in our opinion. That's the local police department. The problem in Nashua is in the local police department. The OHRV community contributes $1 million a year to the fish and game. And fish and game says they don't have the manpower to take care of it. Well, we don't even understand that piece, because there's a ton of money going there, and their problem is an internal problem, not our problem, and we really like to see more enforcement. As far as accidents, there are not very many accidents, and most all the accidents that are reported are not on the trails, they're off trail, but they're not indicated that way. If the ski areas reported every accident that there was at a ski area, nobody would go skiing, or they would think it's a terribly dangerous sport.
Well, Harry, and I've got a doctor pretty soon who will be on, who I'm definitely going to ask about, you know, as you said, riding a bike is dangerous, skiing is dangerous. But I want to ask you something, Harry, if I could, please. You sound a little defensive, and I'm wondering if you feel like ATVs have been unfairly picked on.
No, not at all. I think one of the true issues is that it's so important to, number one, get a good background of how this thing all got put together, what the issues are, what change is, and change is very difficult for people to do, and I wouldn't want one in my backyard necessarily. So you have to figure out how to work it out and make it all palatable for all people. The environmental issue. I was a hut boy at Mount Madison in 1962, and I went up the Valley Way every year. There's erosion problems on the Valley Way. It looks like a single-track ATV trail.
From hiking.
But most of the trails in Coos County aren't on trails. They aren't trails that were made. They're on logging roads. So the environmental issue in Coos County is extremely limited. So, I'm not defensive. All I'm trying to do is make sure that the true facts get out of all the issues. And there's lots of things here that aren't on the table that weren't brought out. I mean, the CPSU, the Consumer Products Safety Division, you start using these things on road, and they're going to make them all be automobiles with airbags and everything else.
Well, the Consumer Product Safety Commission did say that they had real concerns. I don't have it right in front of me, but they think they said that no kid should ride on them, and we'll talk about that. Harry, I'm glad you called. I have one last question for you. We heard earlier from Chris in Nashua, who said, you know, he's tired of the noise and the, you know, violations and so forth. And I have another email from a frustrated Henniker resident who has pretty much the same concerns that, you know, Henniker's opened up mostly unpaved roads to ATVs. This person says most riders follow speed and road access regulations, but some do not. And there's no way to report violations because these vehicles have no visible registrations. So unlike a car, you know, that cuts you off, you can take a glimpse at its license plate. How do you think the ATV community should deal with these types of outliers, if I should call them that?
Well, first off, the RSAs allow in New Hampshire for any town in the state to open up their roads, the town roads. And what's happening in a lot of the towns in the state is they're getting pressure from the OHRV community to open the roads so I can drive my ATV from point A, my house, downtown and go grocery shopping, or basically use them as a car. The enforcement problem should not be number one fish and game's problem, because they're not enforcing roads. It should be the local community. And the local community decides that they want to open up the roads, Laura, for OHRVs to use them as automobiles. Then the local community needs to take responsibility for enforcement.
All right. Harry, I got to let you go because I've got some other people I need to bring into our conversation. But I'm really glad you called. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Take care. That's Harry from Stewartstown. He told us he was past president of Ride the Wilds. Again, that's that huge effort in the North Country, successful effort to expand ATV use and ridership there. I need to bring another voice into our conversation. With us on the phone now from Hanover is Dr. Rito Retterbeschiger. And Dr. Retterbeschiger, thank you very much for being with us. Really appreciate it.
Good morning.
You have looked at pediatric injuries concerning kids on ATVs, and I wonder what you found.
So we are the only level 2 pediatric trauma hospital in New Hampshire, so the highest level of children care for trauma. And we admit probably 10 kids a year with ATV accidents from bad head injuries, face injuries, neck injuries, liver, spleen, kidney injuries. So significant injuries. And I think we probably just see the tip of the iceberg because we see the thickest. But I think we see significant injuries on children and young adolescents. Some of them are the riders, some of them are the passengers, and it's pretty significant. So I think there are some injuries. And you mentioned earlier in the show about the Consumer Product Safety Commission. So that report shows that since, I think, 1982, there was 15,000 deaths in the U.S. And I don't have the numbers for New Hampshire, but we probably see not the ones that don't make it to the hospital, but we see significantly injured kids, 10 a year, probably.
Since when have you seen those deaths? What was the year again, please?
So the deaths from the consumer report is from 1982 to 2015, and that's in adults. 50,000 adults were killed, or 40,129 to be correct.
How much is a lack of helmets the culprit with some of these injuries that you see?
That's a good question. So depending on the age, so we would say that children should not be on an ATV, but I have a biased, I'd say, vision on it, because we see, again, the sickest of the sickest who come to us. But I think most of the time, the patients who come to us did not wear a helmet or did not attach it appropriately, and so they get injured that way.
So if they wore helmets properly, would ATVs be a lot safer, a little safer? What do you think?
The problem is, if they're older, adolescent, they feel invincible, and so I'd say I can't say that an ATV is safe for any child. I think the manufacturer put it on there pretty clearly that no one should ride an ATV below the age of 16, and that's to protect them legally, I guess. And from a medical standpoint, I think when you're 15 and 16, you feel invincible. You have a lot of horsepower underneath you, and you go fast. An analogy was made with the skiing. I think skiing, you usually have only your weight, and you ski at your speed or get into an accident, unfortunately. But I think ATV has a lot of strength underneath you and feel invincible. I think that's part of the problem too.
Well, and Casey, I want to bring you in real quick on this. In terms of laws and ATVs, I read in one of your stories that kids as young as 12 can drive these?
Right.
Not just ride along, but drive.
Right. So there's actually no minimum age for riding on an ATV on private land. You get into age limits mostly whenever it comes to operating on a trail system or on the trails as they're defined on public roads. So kids as young as 12 can drive ATVs on approved New Hampshire roads. That's without a license, as long as they've taken a state-approved safety course. That can be completed either in person or online. The state's guidelines do say that kids between 12 and 14 need to be, quote, accompanied by a licensed adult, but accompanied is defined as being within sight and where physical direction and control can be affected. So the way that that people have described it to me is that it's not necessarily the same as, say, I'm getting my learner's permit and I have my mom or dad sitting next to me in the car. This could potentially be, you know, on a different vehicle. And some of the concerns that I've heard expressed from officials working in kind of the enforcement or safety side of things is that, you know, these are preteens in some cases driving on roads in vehicles that don't have to be inspected the same way that a car would have to be inspected alongside, you know, other cars. And that there's some concern that even though we haven't seen kind of the worst case nightmare scenario with any kind of collision between a young kid and a large vehicle, that's something that there's the potential for that.
Well, and Dr. Reto Bertschinger, one last question for you, please. We got a lot of comments when this series came out from our listeners saying, look, everything carries a risk. One person wrote on our website, how many kids are hurt on bicycles or playing sports? Somebody else said, let's just give kids Twinkies and sit them in front of an iPad. They'll be safe there. This person says, are you liberals kidding me? At this point, anything that gets kids outside, away from screens, is an improvement. And I do wonder how you feel about that. You know, there's so much emphasis now on safety and, you know, older people say playgrounds aren't as much fun as they used to be because they've taken away the seesaws. So, I mean, what do you think?
I think it's very good to be outside, to be mobile, to exercise. I think we can only reinforce that. It's very important. However, I think if I have to protect the children a little bit. They're a vulnerable population, and I think there's, again, the speed of an ATV and the weight of the ATV is very different from skis or from a bicycle. So these ATVs probably weigh at least 200 or 300 pounds. I'm not an expert on the mechanical side of that, but they're heavy, and so they have an inertia, and once they are driving fast, I think they're more difficult to stop. We also saw accidents where the kids were passengers and just propelled off into the woods, into trees, or the ATV like basically flipped over and landed on the child. And these are risks where, yes, it can happen with a bicycle, it can happen on the playground, but I think the whole force is very different, and obviously the consequences then as well. So I think because our children are a vulnerable population, I think we have to try to avoid having them exposed to these possible dangers as much as possible. And I think education is the most important thing that we can do. Just train the people who ride them and inform them of the danger that comes with it. I think it's good to be outside, it's good to be in nature and explore nature as safe as possible, because the consequences of these injuries can be very sad and damaging for long term and for families as well.
Well, Dr. Reto Bertschiger, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Dr. Reto Bertschiger is a pediatric surgeon at Children's Hospital at Dartmouth. He's also a member of the Trauma Medical Review Committee for the New Hampshire Department of Safety. Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477 as we talk about some of the issues that have come up as the state has expanded access to ATVs. We're looking at that, some of the issues that have come up in communities, the economic benefits, the safety concerns. 1-800-892-6477. And Captain Walsh, in addition to being in charge of law enforcement at Fish and Game, you're also in charge of OHRV enforcement and safety education. What'd you think about what we heard from the doctor there about education? What's lacking in education, in your opinion?
Well, one of the big things that I can pull away from what he says is the technology has sort of surpassed what we have for LARS. We talked about the UTVs earlier. That's a relatively new machine.
And, right, and just remind us what the UTVs are.
So a utility terrain vehicle where you sit inside it has a roll cage. So the laws for that, excuse me, for anyone under 18 is the same for an ATV or a trail bike. They have to have a helmet on if they're under the age of 18, but that's it. What we see in Ride the Wilds and other places is families will come up, they'll have a four-year-old that on their way up to Ride the Wilds in a motor vehicle, they needed to be in a car seat or a booster seat. But when they get them in the UTV, all they need is a helmet on, and that's it under our current laws. There is a study committee now put together by Representative Smith and the legislature to take a look at that, whether it be seat belts or even have some provision in the law where a child seat or a booster seat that's required in a motor vehicle will also be required on one of these UTVs when they're out on the road.
So you're saying when these laws were first written, ATVs didn't look like ATVs today.
Exactly.
So they've expanded in terms of size. They've expanded in terms of where you sit and how you sit and how many people and so on.
And where you ride.
And where you ride, because you can ride somewhat on the roads right now.
Correct.
Designated roads.
Correct.
So what do you think needs to change?
I think the safety, the study committee, I think this would be good things come out of this, because when you have a four-year-old or an eight-year-old in a UTV right now riding down Route 110 in Berlin and all they have is a helmet on, when that machine rolls over, that, you know, that helmet, sure, it's going to help possibly with a head injury, but that child is still going to fly out of that machine. I think there needs to be implementation of a law with safety belts, et cetera, or even when people put infants in these things, they need to be in some sort of a restraint car system, car seat, et cetera.
All right. Coming up, we'll hear a little bit more about the economic impact of ATVs. We'll cover some of the safety concerns. And we're going to look a little bit at snowmobiles and access to more snowmobile trails in New Hampshire. All that's coming up, plus your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Off-road, the growing ATV and snowmobile culture in New Hampshire is our topic today. And that's the subject of a recent NHPR newsroom series called Off-Road. We're exploring some of the issues that have come up with this expansion. And let's get your questions and comments in. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. David Walsh is here, captain for New Hampshire Fish and Game's Law Enforcement Division, where he's also in charge of OHRV enforcement and safety education. Also with us, Casey McDermott and Todd Bookman, reporters for us here at NHPR who worked on this series. And Todd, you focused on the economic impact, and I did want to ask you one or two more questions on that. We started out talking about the enormous economic impact that ATV expansion has had in the North Country. You said in one of your pieces that there was a misperception when this first got started that ATVs would not bring in a lot of money, and that's been proven wrong.
Yeah, I think there may be this misperception out there that the sport is lowbrow,
quote unquote,
whatever term you want to use. What my reporting shows, and what you spend a little bit of time talking with people heavily invested in this industry, and you realize that there is a lot of money in the ATV economy, a lot of money to be made, selling and renting these machines. For starters, they're just really expensive. We've talked about the UTVs, the side by sides. I mean, they look like souped up dune buggies. They're pretty flashy, and while you can probably score a used one for a couple $100, the fancy side by sides that a family may want to purchase, they run into the mid 20,000s. $25,000. That's an expensive hobby, and on top of that, you need the trailer to tow it, a truck, safety gear, all weather gear. And then if you're an ATV tourist, if you're coming in from a long distance, that means you're coming up to Berlin or Gorham, and you're going to throw down $100 a night for a hotel. You're going to eat out. You're going to shop at the convenience stores. At the end of the day, it's not all that different than going to a Patriots game. You're dumping a lot of money on your weekend. It's interesting because we also think of Berlin and Gorham as hiking destinations. I obviously they're sort of right at the tip there of the White Mountains. Hiking tourism, though, is a little bit different. We heard from folks who say, well, a hiker may pack his or her gorp and a tent, and they go out into the woods and they live this sort of very low-key existence for a night or two or
so you're
or
not
for
getting
a week.
Big economic
yeah, they're
bang
not
from a hiker.
Necessarily cracking their wallets as much. Sure, they may be staying in a hotel one or two nights, but I kept hearing from people that the ATV crowd spends money. One thing to try to that's really hard to sort of understand, though, is when a community goes all in on ATVs, or at least makes this concerted push for ATVs, it's really hard to know who you may be pushing away. Sure, you want to be an ATV mecca. That means you probably can't also be a bird watching mecca or some other recreation sport that doesn't jive well with motorized vehicles. There's got to be a trade-off here. But I did hear time and again from ATV enthusiasts that the aim here is not to be just an ATV mecca. The hope is to get people in the door, and then they can look around this region and say, God, it's gorgeous here. There's hiking.
Let's come back and camp.
Whitewater rafting. There's
right.
There's fishing. The hope here is that ATV tourism is just the start.
Well, one really important thing that came up that I got from both of your stories is, you're talking about the cash, Todd, and we heard earlier from Ray Bergeron, who runs White Mountain ATV Rental, about all those economic repercussions. You also talked, Todd, with Paula Kinney, director of the Androscoggin Valley Chamber of Commerce. And in this little clip we're going to play, she tells you how the ATV expansion has really fundamentally changed the Berlin-Gorham area's tourist reputation.
We're no longer known as the stinky town. Hate to bring it up, but we were known as that as I grew up here, because I'm from Berlin.
We should explain the stinky town comes from the smell from the paper mill.
Yes. I didn't mean it that way, but you know what I mean. We're known for our beauty now. People come up here for our river, our mountains, our trails. They can't believe how beautiful it is up here.
Again, that's Paula Kinney, director of the Androscoggin Valley Chamber of Commerce. I'd love your thoughts too, Casey, on this idea that people promoting ATV tourism, again, big economic benefits as Todd described, but they're hoping to do it in a way that doesn't turn other types of tourists off.
Right. And that, again, can be somewhat of a challenge. Now, there are different, there are certain trails where all of the users may be mingling with each other. So that means ATVs, hikers, walkers, mountain bikers. But there is some segmentation also that takes place because I had some people tell me, and particularly people who lived in Gorham, that, you know, yes, at the end of the day, we would love to coexist peacefully, but there is something kind of inherently difficult about doing that when you're mixing motorized and non-motorized users all together, because it's like if I were to walk, you know, along a road where cars were driving, there's some inherent kind of, you know, maneuvering that both sides need to do to make that take place peacefully. So there are some growing pains that come along with that. It was interesting. I did, however, stumble upon kind of at the end of my reporting this, you know, there's a lot of, there's, you know, people who are, I would say, more opposed to ATV growth, people who are very pro ATV growth. I did encounter a couple who had opened up a new kind of lodge and campground area in Gorham, and they were trying to achieve a kind of happy medium where,
between quiet uses,
yes,
and non-quiet uses.
Because there are some bed and breakfasts that have said, that told me they will not take ATV tourists because they have concerns about the noise, they have concerns about dirt and mud and disruption. But this couple, they opened the this inn called Hub North. They're looking to cater mainly to people who are hikers, mountain bikers, non-motorized users. They don't live as close to the trailhead as others, so they aren't in an area where ATV users can use the public roads, and they have said that they will open their doors to ATV tourists and that they can stay there. They just would ask them to not, you know, rev up their machines or use their machines on the property. They would ask them to trailer to the nearest trailhead. And they felt like that was a, you know, a happy medium where we're going to try to make a space for everyone, but we're going to ask everyone to kind of respect the, you know, wishes of their neighbors.
Todd?
You jump in on what Casey was chatting about there. I think when we were both reporting this story, what was very sort of palpable is a sense of pride, I think, from backers of this ATV push. There's a lot of pride in putting this region on the map.
Yeah, we heard that from Harry, who
yeah,
called
certainly.
In. Huge effort, lots of volunteers,
Harry and Ray Bertrand,
county, state level.
And this isn't unique. There's actually other sections on the East Coast. There's the Tug Hill section of upstate New York. There's a huge network of trails in West Virginia. There are places that are making efforts to brand themselves, and from an economic
as ATV destinations.
Yeah, yeah, and from an economic development standpoint, you know, that can be a smart move to draw in people from outside the region.
Well, here's an email on this issue of coexistence that you talked about, Casey. Bill in Henniker says, "What about the issue of multi-use trails? They only work for the most obnoxious use," Bill says. For example, it's no fun to bicycle on a multi-use trail when a group of ATVs go by. I biked on the Claremont Trail once, but haven't been back because of the dusty, noisy ATV traffic. Bill says, similarly, it's no fun to be cross-country skiing when snowmobiles go by. Another example is to be kayaking amongst motorboat traffic. Bill says, not everyone can afford these expensive toys, and not everyone wants to commune with nature to the sound of a loud motor. Thanks, Bill, for the email. And, you know, Captain Walsh, I'm guessing you've heard this before, right? I mean, we're not just talking ATVs now. You know, snowmobilers versus cross-country skiers. We've done shows on even people on horses, and hikers don't like the horses on the trails. I mean, everybody wants a piece of the pie here.
That's right. Coexistence, it's tough. It's tough.
Your thoughts on how you resolve this? I mean, New Hampshire's not that big a place, and
you know, it's not.
How do people share?
And you know, to talk about his comment there about the cross-country skis and snowmobiles, I have to chuckle. You know, it's good to cross-country ski on a snowmobile trail. They just don't want to cross-country ski when the snowmobiles are out there. It's difficult. I mean, I don't know what
they appreciate the snowmobiles packing down the trails, but
that's right.
Then when they go by.
That's right. You know, by and large, all this activity we're talking about occurs on weekends in our state. But again, everybody has weekends off, so they all have to do it on the weekends. It's very difficult. And you kind of look to the landowners and what they allow, but, you know, the multi-use trails are there for everybody, and it's an education to get the word out to everybody that they have to share the trails with everybody or they're going to lose the trails. But it's tough. It really is.
What do you mean they have to share the trails or they'll lose the trails? Who will lose the trails?
So, well, everybody will lose, or the motorized community will lose the trails if there's enough complaints and there's enough pressure on the landowners, be it the state or private landowners, that there's problems, then they will shut the trails down. We've seen it before with snowmobile trails, ATV trails, et cetera.
Well, speaking of snowmobiles and their role in New Hampshire, they're long established, as you know, Captain Walsh, and the clubs play a big role in many communities. They're active and involved. The state has worked hard to provide snowmobiles with miles and miles of continuous trails. I want to turn now to a story, though, from Laconia. One such effort to expand snowmobile trails in Laconia remains unresolved, and that's a bridge across the Weirs Channel. Joining us now from Laconia is Wes Anderson. He's Director of Public Works there. Wes, welcome to The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, real broadly, before we get into the bridge, how important are snowmobiles, and if you want to talk about ATVs, you can, to Laconia's tourism?
I'm probably not the right person to ask, being fairly new here. That's probably more along the line talking with our Chamber of Commerce.
Sure. Well, that's fine. So how easy or hard is it to get around the area by snowmobile, Wes?
Well, we have one of the major state trails that come through the city of Laconia on the railroad tracks that basically the Hobo Railroad uses.
Sure.
You know, during the summertime for the tourists.
I'm familiar with that. I've taken it before. So you've got a major snowmobile trail in your city. What's the issue with the bridge, Wes?
It's basically how do people on the east side of basically the lake get to the snowmobile trail? Part of the problem that has come down to it is there are no recognized snowmobile trails that take them from that point to get them to the bridge. So from the city standpoint, if there's no recognized trails to get there, why are we going to allow them to use the bridge to cross when there's no legal way to get to it?
So who uses the bridge now, Wes?
For the most part, we think it's locals that are in the area that are using it to cross from basically the east side of the lake to get over to the main trail that runs through the city.
But, I mean, if snowmobiles aren't allowed on it, who is allowed on it? Is it for walkers?
That's a state route. It's 11B. It comes through here, goes basically from Guilford all the way up to Meredith.
I see. So it was a question of sidewalks and whether snowmobiles could use
Correct.
The sidewalks.
It is truly the sidewalks that the snowmobiles are using.
I see. But they're not supposed to.
Correct.
Because the pedestrians get upset.
Yes.
So you tried to find some middle ground on this. Wes, what was that?
Well, one of the options that we had, if they can get to it, is we were talking about possibly putting a float bridge that would get them from the east side to the west side at the channel, which is about 100 feet wide and is technically feasible.
Technically feasible, but what was the issue?
Well, part of it is we'd have to work with the state to make sure that they would allow it from permitting-wise. The local snowmobile club would have to work to get permission to access it because it's private property on the east side. And then everything would have to come together to make it work.
And it didn't work, from what I understand, right?
From what we understand right now, the snowmobile club has not developed a trail network to get even to the bridge area.
So if I'm a snowmobiler and I want to cross, the channel there, how do I get across? I can't do it? I have to put my snowmobile in my truck and drive across?
Basically, which is if you're in another part of the state that doesn't have access to it, you're basically trailing it to some place where you have a trailhead and you can offload your snowmobile and then ride along the state tracks.
Yeah, so how do you hope this is resolved, Wes? Or is it possible to resolve it?
It's possible. The real question is what does the local snowmobile club want to do in the future? Do they want to, support getting people across at that point? Then they're going to have to start working with landowners to be able to develop a trail that gets them, into the bridge area.
Okay. Wes Anderson, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Okay.
Wes Anderson is Director of Public Works in Laconia. You know, I just wonder what you think, Captain Walsh. You don't have to address specifically this Laconia situation, but here we have once again a desire for off-road recreation. New Hampshire has expanded access, both in terms of ATVs and snowmobiles. But then there are these bottlenecks, and you can't get around them.
Sure, and I think Wes hit the nail on the head, working with the clubs to identify what the major issues are for their riders and to work with the landowners to solve that. I don't know the specifics of that area, but, I think on trails up there, it might take a little longer. Everybody wants the shortcut to go to where they want to go, but there is access to trails up there, and if the club feels the need to, get a trail to that bridge, I think they could work on it.
One last question for you, Captain Walsh. As ATVs expand and as we move into snowmobile season, what's sort of the one message that you want to put out there?
you know, working with landowners and just the responsible riding is the safe and responsible riding is the big thing, because the future of any sport, whether it be snowmobiling, OHRVs, is the conduct of the riders in the public perception. And if they can work with landowners and just have a good public perception and not have that stigma that could be out there about people on ATVs, it's going to go a long way for the future of their sport.
Todd, I know that you guys finished this part of the series. There may be more to come, and we'll ask Casey about that. But other themes that you want to raise in terms of the stories that you did or stories you might do in the future?
You know, one thing that I'm looking into now after talking with so many people up in Berlin and Gorm is the unique impact this ATV economy may be having on the housing market. I heard a number of anecdotes.
Second homes.
I heard a number of anecdotes of people who realized, I mean, the property values in Berlin are seriously depressed. You can still pick up a single family home in downtown for $30,000-$40,000. May not be in very good shape, but it's a really low starting point in that housing market. And people told me that they know of tourists from Massachusetts, New York, Rhode Island, Connecticut who are buying second homes up there. The price is right, and it allows you to store your ATV and other gear in a place. And we're finally starting to see housing prices. I looked into it. Are starting to rise in Coas. So that might be an interesting trend to follow in the
that
future.
Is interesting, because we have talked about the depressed housing market there for a long time. So, Casey, what remains unexplored?
So I think what I'm interested in keeping an eye on is, you know, our series focused mainly on the North Country. But as we've talked about today, this is an issue that is that many communities all across the state are trying to grapple with, and how to allow for this growth, but also to manage it, you know, responsibly and keep the needs of all of the residents of a community in mind when deciding to expand this. So I'll be, you know, trying to follow that as we move forward.
Sure, because we got a couple emails. We got a call from Nashua concerned, a couple emails from Henniker, one that just came in from Warren. That I don't have time to read, but raising similar concerns about, you know, sharing the outdoors, sharing the trail, and some frustrations. All right, lots more to follow up on. Thank you all very much for being here. Todd, thank you for helping us
out.
We appreciate it.
Sure.
Todd Bookman, he's a reporter for us here at NHPR. He worked on the Off-Road in New Hampshire series, as did Casey McDermott. Casey, thank you
as
well.
Thank you.
And Captain Walsh, it was good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
That's David Walsh, captain for New Hampshire Fish and Game. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.